All right. This is the podcast. I am the guy who hosts the podcast. Welcome. Before we get to my guest this week, I want to thank everybody for the kind words about my appearance this past week on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. Did stand up on it again. Had a great time. The studio audience was awesome. So if you haven't seen it, go to YouTube. Go to the Late Show with Colbert YouTube page, and you can find it there. You just Google Paul Mercurio on Late Show with Stephen Colbert. You know how to Google. I don't need to tell you that. But anyway, it was really, really fun and exciting to be on again. And I hope you can check it out if you haven't. And hey, please start spreading the word a little bit more for me if you can. If you haven't already, please do so about the podcast. Really been excited about the guests I've been getting. And we want to keep building our following. And also, please leave a nice comment on iTunes if you haven't done so. If you're new to the podcast, those that leave comments are put in my will, and there'll be something in it for you later. That's all I'm saying. My guest this week, Cindy Wilson, founding member, vocalist, songwriter for the B-52s. Yes, I have partied to this band so much. I'm so excited to talk to her, and really cool conversation. She has a great new album out that she's touring with, so. And we talk about the B-52s and all that good stuff. A really cool conversation. It goes a lot of different directions. So enjoy it. And please leave some comments on iTunes. Enjoy Cindy Wilson. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. Very excited to have as my guest someone that I've partied to a lot as a result of a lot. I'm not sure what the right term is, but caused me to be very drunk and very happy. I'm really, really, I'm very excited to have the founding member, vocalist, songwriter of the B-52, Cindy Wilson, who has a new solo album out called Change, which we're going to talk about. But welcome to the show. Thanks for being on.
Gosh, thanks. Happy to be here.
Yeah, man. You're the part of the playlist, the B-52s, when you want to really bring it to, like, you know, the fifth gear at a party. In fact, I work on the Late Show. I work on the Late Show with Stephen Colbert, and we have load-in music for the audience as they're being brought into the studio and they're sitting and waiting for the show. And there's like three or four B-52 songs. So, kudos to you guys.
That's great.
Man.
I know. I mean, you know, a lot of people know, you know, so many of the songs. It's kind of been the American culture now, you know.
Oh yeah. You have the classics, Private Idaho, and I turned my friends on to Channel Z, and they're like, what's Channel Z? And they said, and then that was like, that went right into the playlist, and the whole
awesome.
Yeah.
That song is always relevant. It's great.
Yeah.
It's a great song. Sadly, it's relevant.
Yeah, I know. It's sick. Just fantastic. But, and I want to talk about the B-52s, but let's talk about your album for a second. And, this is the first solo album for you, and it must be exciting to kind of sort of branch out a little bit and move in another direction away from the group a little bit.
Yeah. We started about 4 years ago writing the record, and we now here we are on tour, and we partnered with Kill Rock Star record label, and they're guiding us and helping us out with planning our promotion and what we should do, and it's been a really good partnership. And we're building the audience, the music is really different for the B-52s, but it's a great live show like the B-52s, but it just kind of flows from one song to another, and people have been really surprised and they're loving the show, so it's wonderful.
And I think you described the show as like a mixed media event almost. Like you've got a few things going on. Like what's the vibe of it? What are you guys doing in the show?
Well, we're synced up to video, and we have art. You know, Sydney Lyons came up with the art for the show, and it really syncs up well, and it adds such a wonderful layer of creativeness, you know, and and depth to the songs. And it's an experience, you know. I'm enjoying it too. It brings a lot more depth to it, I think.
Yeah. How, I mean, going from sort of being part of the group to being the you know, the person that's writing the songs and sort of the center of it. And I'm not name dropping, but I had Paul McCartney on my podcast and I talked to him about going from the Beatles to Wings and sort of the taking on that new role. Is that intimidating? Is that exciting where you're kind of more the front person in a lot of different ways?
Well, and the B-52s, I would write.
Yeah.
You know, it was collaborative effort.
Right.
And this, it's a misnomer saying this is a solo record when it's actually working with some real creative, smart people and, you know, as partners in this too. And it's a similar thing as far as that is concerned. But, you know, I'm kind of the student in this project where I'm learning so much at my age, which is fantastic. And
what could you be learning? You've been at this for 40 years. What could you be learning? What? You're the founding member of the B-52s, one of the seminal bands in rock. What the heck could you be learning at this stage? I guess there's always learning, right? What kind of things are you learning at this stage of your life?
Oh, well, see, learning to sing differently, a different style.
Yeah.
And but I mean, I am bringing myself to the project, of course, and bringing my emotions, my inner soul, and my performance style. But there's a lot to learn. The business is completely different from when I started, and the way you go about touring, and it's totally changed. You know, we're back to the rough and ready, getting in the van though, and staying at cheap motels, and it's the rock and roll life. You know,
It's
like in the beginning of the B-52s though. You know, and that's similar to that, but it's a lot that's refreshing and wonderful to be able to start over and do it again.
You had been sort of performing, but taking time off here and there. So this is the right. Am I right? You sort of kind of were, you know.
I mean, I took after Cosmic Thing. We performed 3 years straight without going home, barely, you know.
Wow.
And I miss Ricky. And
your husband,
you know. Yeah. And I love the band.
Yeah.
But it was I felt like I needed to move back to be around my parents. Yeah. and since, you know, they were really mourning Ricky, and it just seemed like I needed to get closer to them.
Yeah. So people know Ricky's your brother who passed away, unfortunately.
Yeah, in 85.
Yeah.
Yeah, of AIDS.
Yeah.
It was tragic. And as so many people have lost loved ones and friends, it was like a big atom bomb going off, you know.
I mean, you saw it. Did you see it coming? I mean, I guess because he probably deteriorated over time, or still.
Well, he was in the beginning part of the AIDS epidemic. It seemed early to me, but I mean, I would ask Rick. I said, you know, we were living together, but he was very private, and I think it was so early that he didn't know what to make of it, you know? Mm-hmm. So, but anyway, I felt like I needed to go back to Georgia and leave the band.
Yeah.
But without leaving, I gave them a year's notice, and they went on and wrote good stuff. And then after that, you know, asked if I was interested in touring. And so, you know, I went back and we started touring again. And then I left while I was having babies, you know. That was you know, I had to have time off for that.
And then
I went back. I took my babies with me on tour with a nanny and my husband, and we had a family bus, and it was wild. And you know, you can take them on tour when they're really young.
Yeah.
But when they start getting, you know, bored and they have to go to school.
Yeah.
You know,
that happened to
they
me.
Have to
yeah, exactly.
Stay home.
Yeah. We have a son, and, you know, I do stand up. So I tour around the country, same thing. And, you know, it's, a similar, yeah. Not exactly the same. So when he was little, I was able to take him.
It's cool. I mean, they've got great memories of it. My son barely remembers it.
Yeah.
We did a
family vacation. I had a one night gig, like this one night gig at Bimbo's 365, a rock club in San Francisco, and it fell right on my son's spring break from school. So I took him and my wife, and I did my show, got that out of the way, and then spent the rest of the 5 days just being tourists.
Cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun. We went all over the place.
Yeah.
And the bus was just like some spaceship, you know, going.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you're self-contained. It's like your own little world on wheels. Like, you don't.
It really is. It was really cool, you know.
Yeah.
And, but I'm, you know, so, you know, we, and then I left these to have my son.
Mm-hmm.
So I have two children.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went back. So I kind of got to,
nice balance.
Step in and out, as it were.
Yeah, it's a nice balance. And you have your son to thank for this album, right? Wasn't he having a birthday party and you hired a Beatles tribute band, and that's sort of how you guys, Ryan Monahan.
Exactly.
And, yeah,
yeah.
Yeah,
that's what happened, exactly.
Tell that story.
Yeah, my husband said that, well, we have to have a Beatles theme birthday party for Nolan, and I thought it was such a great idea.
And how old was your son, what was that birthday for him? How old?
About 10.
Oh, that's very cool.
Age.
That's cool.
My kids are college age now.
Oh,
you know?
Man. Wow. And so you have the party, you have the tribute band, and what happens?
And, you know, that we kept using them because they were so great,
mm-hmm.
really good musicians. And so somebody asked me if I would, wanted to do some local music thing in Athens.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought the best, I mean, you know, young musicians to do it with would be Ryan and Emil, mm-hmm. and the group, you know. So we ended up doing lots of cover songs. And, you know, it was actually a good way to kind of get a relationship, you know, with the band. And so, you know, I started working with Ryan and Suni in Suni's studio in Athens, Georgia.
Uh-huh.
And we were just experimenting with music and styles and effects and bringing in different musicians to fill out some parts. And it was really a creative, such a creative experience.
Now, were these styles that, like, you kind of were storing away in your head as you had downtime with your family? Were you sort of, do you tend to write that way? Or you're like, you know, if I do another song or another album, I kind of like to do a little of this? Or was it just stuff that was coming up in the moment in the sessions with these guys?
Well, you know, like I said, it's not a solo project. It's a misnomer. It really is a partnership.
Right.
And, you know, and they brought some songs too. And it was a very cool learning experience. And, you know, I just was happy to experiment and do the songs.
That's great. What did you want to try to say with this album? It seems like it's sort of I've seen you describe it almost like a Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band kind of album, but were you intentionally wanting to sort of have it be different vibes, feels, genres within the album, as opposed to trying to go with one sort of theme in terms of genre?
Well, what I meant by that was how it flowed, Sgt. Pepper. Album flowed from one song to another, you know, and
mm-hmm.
it Changes is the name of our album, and it really is a it lightly goes into fantasy and inward emotions, mm-hmm. and it's very much a show, a live show.
Yeah.
And when you listen to it on the album, mm-hmm. You can picture it in your mind as well.
What is it about Athens, Georgia? There's creatively, I mean, Michael Stipe is, kind of from the area, if you will. And like, what is it about that area that's like a real hotbed for incredibly talented people? What's in the water down there? What are you guys doing?
Well,
or you just have better weed down there than everybody else? Maybe that's it. The weed down
there. No, I think everybody, there's potential in, so many cities.
Yeah.
And there are so many great creative cities. And Athens is one of those. It's a little cheaper to live there. Mm-hmm. There's lots of, there's a kind of a scene. And also, it's a lot of places to play now. Mm-hmm. In the old days, when Beef Stew started, you had to, one or two places. And but now, it supports a few bands now, so it's that's pretty great. And we have a lot of music coming through from other, a great music scene from other places, mm-hmm. Coming through, big acts and everything. But it's I think it's people are people are social there, and party. You can go to parties and you meet interesting people, and there's a lot of strong artist community there. So I think it's just a, like you said, a hotbed of artists in Athens.
And you had you from a child, music was almost an obsession.
Yeah,
and you had a wide variety of tastes, like Nancy Sinatra, but Gary Lewis, the Playboy, like. Beatles, like, were you playing and singing at a young age?
Well, just Ricky and I would sing. Ricky was a self-taught mm-hmm. Musician, mm. and he was really instrumental in singing with him and doing harmonies. And just, he taught me to be unique mm-hmm. and go with follow the unusual mm-hmm. And don't try to copy somebody else, just come up with your own thing, and this I followed that rule. He told me never put vibrato in your voice, I remember that.
What do you explain to people who aren't musically educated what that means, put bravado in your voice?
When you put that, that waiver that a lot of professionals mm-hmm. put into it, I think what he was meaning was that don't try to sound slick,
be natural. Yeah.
Yeah. Or be punk or reach that primal, person inside, mm-hmm. And come up with your own thing, So
how did
that's
you guys,
what I tried to do.
Well, you've certainly done that over the years. I mean, the story of, if I understand it, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the B-52s came together when you were all, like, had an impromptu jam session at a local Chinese restaurant, is that right?
Well, we had we went out to eat with, it was Owen, Scott, Kate, Fred, Keith Strickland, Ricky, and myself.
Yeah, wait, hang on a second. Hang on a second. I like how you say these names like they're just people. Kate Pearson. Fred Schneider, Keith, this is like the B-52s. Yeah, we just went out, whatever. It's like, just hearing that, you're giving me chills. So
We did. We, just actually, freaks in Athens, but we didn't have much money. We went to a Chinese restaurant and we all contributed to this drink, which is the largest Polynesian ceramic, you know,
flaming volcano, drink. Right? It's called a flaming volcano.
Yeah, it's a flaming volcano with Sterno on the top, and it was had a moat around it, a giant moat filled with a rum concoction that was so intoxicating. Anyway, it got the job done. We went back to the friend's house and started jamming in this his basement. And we were rolling on the floor laughing. It was so much fun. And it was an instant kind of amazing happening. And so we knew that, said, well, let's do this. Let's get some songs together from this jam and play a friend's Valentine's party. Uh-huh. And that's what we did. And then we started playing other parties. And then the idea was, I think it'd be just great if we went to New York. And actually, that's the furthest that we had planned on anything. Going to New York was the big end all.
That's gutsy. Your kids, you're barely in your 20s, right? I mean, that's gutsy.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, they're my age. Yeah. And when the Beat 52 started, I mean, we started when I was 19.
Jesus.
And my kids are about that age now. I can't believe it.
Yeah, it goes fast, right?
I know. So I just, you know, and.
Did you guys go? So you guys went to New York? You said, let's go. And
we went to New York. The next step was getting our stuff together and go and play in New York. Wow. And so we borrowed my dad's station wagon and piled it up with our equipment. We went up to play Max's Kansas City. And then the next trip up, we played CBGB's in Max's.
Oh, yeah.
And then we put out our 45 independent single. Mm. And that's when the single really got the word around. And the next time we went up to New York, we played Hurrahs. Mm-hmm. And we were about to soundcheck, but then Ricky looked out the window, and there was a line around the block. So that's when we knew that something had happened.
Wow.
And it was amazing.
That sound is so distinctive of the B-52s. Did that emanate, or did you find that pretty instantly in that jam session, or did that evolve over time?
Yeah, well, we had a lot to play with.
In what sense?
We have so many, with three vocalists.
Oh, yeah.
And Ricky's amazing guitar style. Mm. And Keith Strickland, too, he wrote music as well. Mm. And, you know, it was, we had all of the elements. It was like just a pot of soup, just putting it all the elements.
Yeah, I don't know if you found this, but of my friends, the ones that got turned on to you first and then turned us on to you, you were big with, and I mean this as a compliment, like the nerdy engineer computer types. Like they kind of found you first, at least in my circle of friends, and then turned us on to you. And I don't know if that was the case sort of generally, but that sort of fusion of like sort of pop electronic, like this. See, I'm not musically inclined. I don't know how you do this as music. Yeah, man, totally original. Yeah. How do you hear all of that? How do you figure out that's going to be your sound? Like what is the process to get to that place? I know it's a big question.
A lot of jamming.
Yeah.
You know, Ricky and Keith would bring the music. They had a wonderful sense of style and being different and getting away from the norm. Mm. And you know, we set out to be very different.
Yeah.
And then with Fred's Styles singing and his kind of poetry and song, and Kate and I were contributing lyrics and vocal melodies and harmonies. Mm-hmm. And it all stems from just getting on this kind of cosmic creative level.
Yeah.
And just kind of shutting down your mind sometimes and just letting it all happen.
Yeah, come from inside.
It's, And then going back and picking out the parts that work together, and some really happy accidents that come up from jamming.
Yeah, it's funny. And that's so kind of that's
it's a hard way to write. It's labor intensive, but it's really magical when it really hits.
Yeah, you know, it's not too dissimilar from writing jokes. Like for me, anyway, I'll go on stage now with an idea of something, and then just start talking and intentionally box myself into a corner where your instincts kick in that you have to be funny because you're in front of a bunch of people.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so you record. I always record on my iPhone and then go back and listen. I'm like, oh, I had that one, and it's building blocks. It's one line at a time, and it's like, oh, I said this thing. I've done the joke 18 times, literally, but now this 18th time I said a line that worked perfectly that I never said before. So I add that line, and it's exactly what you said. It's labor intensive. I'm not a guy that sits in front of a computer and writes the whole thing out and then goes into it. It kind of has to come out.
That's the way to do it.
Yeah.
That's
exactly. Yeah. What was Kate doing and Fred doing before that you guys all teamed up? Were they doing sort of in other little bands?
Fred was in forestry school in University of Georgia for a while. And then he left, you know.
Yeah.
It wasn't his thing.
Yeah.
It was, and Kate and her husband had moved from England.
Mm-hmm.
Kate was had been over there hitching, and she met her husband. And they came over, and they heard that Athens had a really good scene here, you know, there. And so they moved out into the country outside of Athens, and it was a goat farm.
Mm-hmm.
And then Kate got a job working for the newspaper in Athens.
Mm-hmm.
And I forgot what it was, but and, you know, so Ricky and Keith had come back from Europe. They had been on hitching around and sleeping in caves in Greece and heavy. And Ricky went to language school in Germany for a little while, learning German. And, you know, they had just kind of hitching all around and you know, having a wonderful time. And they came back to Athens. And I was living in Athens. I was 18, 19.
Mm-hmm.
And then Ricky said, well, let's get together some kind of performance band. We were going to go over and be street musicians. But that got sidetracked and the Beef 2 started, which was amazing.
Mm. Did you, when you were coming up with the sound of the B-52s, it's so different and edgy for the time. Was it a hard sell commercially, like to get that single made? Like, were people like, plus, but you had the whole look, you had that look, I think the B-52 is from a Southern slang for wild bouffant hairdo that you guys had. Is that right? I don't know.
Well, Keith Strickland had a dream. We labored over the name, I guess, like every band does, you know, and it went on for days, you know. It was torture trying to come up with a name.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at one point it was the Attack Elephants, you know.
That works.
And, you know, yeah, you know, I kind of like it, you know. But Keith had a dream, and it was about a band named the B-52s, so that was good enough for us.
Wow,
you know,
so, that's crazy. And was that was that sound so unique that it was a tough sell? You know, sometimes people are ahead of the curve and everybody else has to catch up, or was it just the right sound?
I think so. I think we were way beyond, you know, by the curve. And you know, that still sounds not dated, you know. It sounds... you know, it's so unique and original that when we play, it feels, you know, really modern to me, you know?
Well, that's a great point, because there's no imitators. Like, that's the sound where you go, like, there's to this day, there's nobody doing that sound in any shape, way, shape, or form, or presentation.
I mean, people are inspired by us, that's good. Yeah. You know, that's what you want to do.
Yeah.
You know, but it's hard to actually imitate us, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah.
So it's amazing. You know, we're having 40 years with, you know, the B-52s. We've been around.
Yeah.
And it's crazy.
Go ahead.
No, I was just saying, you know, we played the Growler Festival in L.A., and there's a lot of 20-somethings, and we had a mosh pit, you know, right in front of us. And how cool is that?
That's awesome. Know? It's like, that's when you know your kids probably look at you as like their hero when you're connecting with kids their own age. That's pretty awesome.
Well, it's interesting, yeah.
And are you going to, you're touring with Change, and then are you going to be going out with the B-52s in some way to celebrate 40 years, or what's any plans to do something?
Well, we haven't stopped. We're always touring the B-52s. We do clusters of shows, mm-hmm. and so we're always working. We haven't really stopped for very long, you know.
That's great.
And so yeah, and we will be working a lot more this coming 2018.
Well, I want people to get this album. It's fantastic. Where can they? What's the tour schedule like for Change right now? You guys got a site that people can go to? Or
yeah, we're gonna be. Check out my site. You know, my Twitter mm-hmm. But we're going to Europe in February, which is. I can't believe it.
Wow.
And it's the tickets are already selling well.
Great.
I'm just so joyous. You know, yeah. It's so cool.
And
we're going to be gone for about 2.5 weeks.
Wow.
You know, 3 weeks.
Good for you.
So it's going to be really fun.
Now, the kids are in college, so they don't go with you, right? It's just you're just with.
Yeah. And it would be too expensive to.
Yeah.
You know, it's trying to make everything. You know, work financially, you have to watch the budget.
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. You gotta put some money aside for drinks after the show. You can't just spend it all on travel.
Oh, you get those free.
Yeah, there you go. Hey, I want to recommend a book to you that you would appreciate. I interviewed Dave Grohl's mother, Virginia Grohl. She has a book out called "From Cradle to Stage," and it's about. Mm-hmm. It's the moms of like 18 or 19 major musicians and how these mothers nurtured these children and their musical interests. And as a mom yourself and someone who was a kid musically, I think you'd really appreciate it. It's a really great book. You should check it out.
Yes.
And
music is the best thing for people. Both my kids are musical and it's their life. You know, they really are into it.
So cool. Yeah.
It's important.
Yeah. Well, listen, this really is very exciting for me to talk to you because someone that like personally has just been a huge fan, but also creatively from an artistic standpoint, like incredible amount of respect for how unique you guys are and have always been. So I was really psyched to have you on. So I wish you best of luck with
that.
That's
a pleasure.
Yeah. And, enjoy the tour and enjoy Europe and we'll keep in touch and have you on again and we'll catch up down the road, I hope.
Please do. It was fun. Thank you.
All right. That was Cindy Wilson. How cool is she? I'm going to hang with her. I think I'm going to hang with her. She's probably going to blow me off and not even take my call, but I'm going to call anyway when she comes into town because I'm a bit of a fan. All right. Hope you enjoyed that. Tune in next week. We got a new guest and please leave some comments on iTunes and please spread the links around. Tell your friends and family, even people you don't know. Just go up to them on the street and let them know about the podcast and tell them to subscribe and start listening. Thanks, folks.